Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. And Mike is very active on Twitter and is involved with Weiss Ratings. And we love getting Mike on the show just to get his thoughts on a range of markets. So, Mike, welcome onto the KE Report. And you were mentioning an article that you wrote and had been talking to some of your subscribers with, and it was based on the three I's of inflation, invasion, and interest rates. So I'd love to kick things off with your thoughts on the first I, inflation. We just had that 7.9% CPI reading just a few weeks back. By all indications, it looks like inflation is going to be stickier than many expected and higher than many expected. What's your outlook on inflation, and where do you think things are at in the markets?
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. And you're absolutely right. You know, as an investor right now, whether you want to look at it from sort of the threat side or the opportunity side, it really is those three forces, those three I's that are driving things. So when you talk about the first of these three I's, the inflation component, I mean, we had, you know, a CPI reading of up 7.9% year over year in the most recent month. That's bad enough. I mean, that's the worst you get going all the way back to 1982. And if you go back to 1982, that's when we were actually coming down. So, you know, we had already had the peak and we were starting to fall drastically as a result of some of the things the Fed's Paul Volcker did at the time with interest rates. So in any event, you know, already the worst since 1982. But what that number doesn't capture is some of the second round impacts, the additional increases we've seen in terms of commodities and other inflationary pressures as a result of the second I, which is invasion. A lot of the impact of the second I here wasn't captured in that data. It didn't capture the most recent additional spikes in energy and fertilizer and all these other types of inputs in terms of driving inflation prices higher in this economy. So, you know, you've got an inflation situation that was already bad enough. It's probably going to get worse before it even has the potential to get better. And, you know, your listeners probably know, you probably know that the way the CPI is constructed, it doesn't really include things like actual house prices. It includes imputed rents, what you think you could rent your property for and how much that's gone up. So if you look at what's happened to actual house prices, I mean, they've been appreciating in the U.S. at a rate faster than we saw at the peak of the housing bubble. So if you just used, you know, the actual cost of what we all pay for housing here in the U.S. and use that number, it'd be even worse. So, again, you know, the inflation backdrop that we have is something the Fed got completely wrong with its transitory argument, way undershot with its forecast, and now it is really behind the curve dramatically in terms of where interest rates are relative to inflation, which, again, would sort of bring you to the second eye, right? Invasion. Putin's invasion in Eastern Europe, the Ukraine invasion is obviously a huge human story, it's tragedy. The images and the things we see happening there are terrible from a, you know, human and societal standpoint, but also from an economic standpoint, if you try and look at what it's meant for markets and what it's meant for the economy, again, it's additional upward pressure on prices, not just the obvious things like crude oil and things like gasoline that come from it, but things like fertilizer. Russia's one of the top five producers of fertilizer in the world. So what's up 40% in the last month? The price of fertilizer. Wheat. Russia and Ukraine are huge producers of wheat. So what just hit an all-time high in the Chicago Board of Trade in terms of wheat futures? That was that commodity. So, you know, you just go down the line of different things, different commodities and so on that are produced in that part of the world, and that supply is either being deliberately being cut off due to sanctions or just indirectly being threatened by the war, then it really does add to that pressure. So those two eyes go together. And then, you know, that brings in the third eye, which is interest rates. Again, the Fed had told us this was all going to be transitory, and the Fed had just assumed all these things were going to go away despite having deeply, deeply negative interest rates, despite keeping their sort of COVID emergency rate and bond buying well in place after the worst of the pandemic was clearly over. All of that combined with huge fiscal spending put us behind the eight ball. You know, we've had supply chain issues, we've had over demand, too much money chasing too few goods and so on. And what you end up with is massive asset inflation, massive real-world inflation, and a situation where the Fed is way behind the curve. I mean, sure, the Fed just raised interest rates 25 basis points. That's the first time it's raised them since December 2018. But that only gives you, at the upper end of the Fed's range, a 0.5% interest rate. What's inflation? 7.9%. So that means when you adjust interest rates for inflation, you're talking about rates that are negative to the tune of more than real interest rates, inflation-adjusted rates, that are negative to the tune of more than 7%. That just means money, even after the slight Fed move, that the incentivizing to borrow and spend and to speculate in assets is enormous. It would take multiple rate hikes, very quick, very large, much more than anybody really thought possible a year ago, for the Fed to get anywhere even near the current rate of inflation. And so that's the third challenge that investors are facing. They all kind of go together. They're all, you know, major issues that that again are impacting markets, and investors have to face with a realistic approach if they're going to preserve build their wealth in this environment.
Well, Mike, loved you going over those three I's, and I think they are the three most important things that are affecting the market right now. As far as the inflation, I mean, a lot of people are very strict with their view on it, that it comes from the creation of new money supply, and that when you create more money supply through either fiscal and monetary means, that you have more money chasing fewer goods. So a lot of people would say this inflation was long overdue. Then we saw it was the pandemic supply chain issues that were being blamed, or just the base effect. And then it's the invasion has even kicked it up to the next level. But is there a point where this inflation was going to happen one way or the other? It may have been accentuated by the invasion, and it may have been accentuated by the pandemic shocks. But overall, inflation was already baked into the cake with the amount of liquidity that the Fed helped create and backstop the government when they created their fiscal spending. So is there a potential that the Fed, even though they messaged they thought it was going to be transitory, knew full well that inflation was coming and see it as their only way to inflate their way out of their big fear, which is deflation?
Sure. I mean, if you look at the magnitude of the fiscal stimulus thrown at the COVID pandemic and its aftermath, and you look at what the Fed did on its side in terms of monetary stimulus, bond buying, money printing, slashing rates to zero and so on, buying all kinds of assets from junk bonds to regular bonds, treasuries, mortgages, and on and on and on. The issue isn't so much that the Fed and the federal government shouldn't have done a lot to combat the worst of the pandemic. I mean, the widespread economic shutdown and everything, I mean, it was a terrible backdrop, and it's we're better off for them throwing a lot at the problem in the worst of the crisis. But what the Fed did, and arguably the federal government did, is it overstayed its welcome. Even as people began to get back to a sense of normalcy, even as the job market began to climb out of this, this deep hole, and even as the markets recovered dramatically, instead of dialing back that stimulus, the Fed and the federal government just kept at it, continued to print and borrow and spend money at a rate that we, really haven't seen at any point in modern history. You have to kind of go back to the World War II sort of era to see economic program stimulus of this size thrown at the market. So it's no surprise then that you see the response being this dramatic inflation, dramatic asset bubble. I mean, housing prices going up at rates that eclipsed even the rise we saw in the biggest U.S. housing bubble in history. I mean, all of those things are the fallout of policy being kept in place for far too long and far too aggressively, which, if you look at the past history of previous stimuli and the Fed especially, that's what they always do. They always, they fail to see a crisis coming, whether it's the dot-com bubble, the mortgage bubble, and so on. Then once it pops, they get super aggressive trying to combat it. But then even as, the market and the economy heals itself over time, they stick around for too long. It's, it's sort of like the Roach Motel thing. They, in theory, they can check in, but they can't check out. So that's why we're facing a lot of the issues. The excuse making that it's all supply chain, or, once used cars go down in price, then we'll be fine. And hey, if you ignore the fact that housing's depreciating at the fastest rate ever, rents are up a lot less. And, the amount of excuse making instead of just taking responsibility for it and finally saying, look, we were wrong, we want to fix this, is extraordinary. And I think the Fed is now clearly trying to pivot very quickly, and it's probably going to be one of the most aggressive hiking cycles we've seen in a while, or at least the start of one, until something in the economy and the markets break.
Well, that's going to be what my next question was, Mike, is about, I wonder when that breaking point or that tipping point does come, because the Fed is notoriously behind the curve, but this is probably the most behind the curve they've ever been. I mean, to have a Fed funds rate that was at zero when inflation, at least on the government statistics, was 8 is way behind the curve. And then the other question is, is this a policy mistake that we're going to look back in history and say, they should have acted sooner, but they also should have stopped their QE sooner, because they just got done tapering in March, and that was a 12-year quantitative easing program with a few periods on and off, but really these are the sins of the great financial crisis from 2008 and 2009, where they kept buying bonds and kept being accommodative in this emergency state for a dozen years. So is this a giant policy mistake the Fed has just made, and can they actually tame inflation at this point?
It is an enormous policy mistake that I would put on par with missing the housing bubble and underestimating what that meant and the mortgage bubble meant for the economy back then. I mean, again, if you simply look at real interest rates, you adjust either the official federal funds rate that they control directly or something like the 10-year note yield that they kind of influence indirectly. In both cases, real yields and real rates are the lowest in modern history, even lower than we saw in the 70s and 80s. And that was, what forced Paul Volcker to buckle down, jack interest rates way higher, send the economy into a recession and then a double dip recession. I mean, that was a huge period of turmoil for the markets. You could arguably say it's even more behind the curve now than it was then. So yeah, it's not, I mean, it's a real sort of mess and environment that I think calls for a lot of volatility, a lot of catch up, and a lot of market turmoil that I think, people aren't really used to, especially after we had pretty much an up and to the right ascent off the lows set during the COVID pandemic. And even pre-COVID, the markets were pretty quiescent, and not all that crazy. They were generally doing okay. And I think people are in for, if they're not prepared for volatility, if they're not, reducing position size, raising more cash, having hedges and things like gold and other resource equities and the actual resources themselves, in their portfolios, I think they're going to really get left behind here. They're not going to have as much protection and they're not going to have as much profit potential because it really is a situation that's, not akin or not exactly like the 70s and 80s, but enough parallels that if you think that you're living in the same economic environment that we had pre-COVID, I think, you're way off base as an investor and you need to make sure you're onside, not offside, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, Mike, a lot of people are waiting for things to get back to quote unquote normal, but I don't think they realize that the new normal is this new, almost like you said, 1970s style stagflationary environment where you have rising wages, you have rising energy prices, you have runaway inflation, and you have expectations for lower growth. The GDP growth estimate for the first quarter is pretty close to zero. So the other thing is they've started this rate hiking cycle as it seems things are starting to cool in the economy. Is it possible that things go from a stagflationary environment to, if the yield curve was to invert or if these energy prices stay high, could we be looking at a recession about a year off from now?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the yield curve because it's very interesting, pardon the pun, to me that if you look at this cycle relative to the last four or five even, or even if you want to go back further than that in interest rate history, the Fed only just raised interest rates, its federal funds rate, by 25 basis points a couple, a few days ago. Yet the 2-year, 10-year Treasury curve was recently at about 17 basis points. In other words, 2-year yields had already shot up quite a bit at the back end of the yield curve, and people weren't selling bonds as aggressively. They weren't selling 10 years. They definitely weren't selling 30 years as aggressively as they were selling the short end. So what that tells you is that the markets think the Fed is behind the curve, and they're so far behind the curve, they're going to have to get really aggressive now. But because they're going to have to do that, it's going to ultimately probably dislocate the markets, dislocate the economy, threaten us with recession, and lead to down the road the Fed's having to reverse some of that. I mean, I don't want to bore your listeners too much, but if you look at certain parts of the interest rate futures market or forward market, you can already see some future cuts being priced into the future interest rate outlooks right now. And the Fed only hiked rates once already in the near term. So it's a confusing thing to wrap your head around. But the bottom line in plain English is that people and the markets are afraid the Fed's going to have to be very aggressive now. That's ultimately going to cause dislocations, possibly a recession, and that means they're going to have to reverse those moves and backpedal again before too long down the road.
Well, that is the concern, is how far do they get down this rate hiking cycle before they inevitably have to pause if there's a market tantrum and then reverse course and start printing money with both hands and start cutting rates again. So I guess as somebody that writes the Safe Money Report, what are some asset classes that you think are good, maybe defensive areas for investors to ride out the storm, Mike?
Sure. I think, when it comes to equities, you want to have fewer equities or lower allocation to stocks than you had previously before this higher volatility era, so more cash. Within equities, you want to own things like resources, so not just oil, but also hard and soft commodities or companies that have exposure to those. Precious metals, I've been overweight and bullish on since the second half of 2018 when this bull market in precious metals began. Last year's correction lasted longer than I thought, as we've talked about, but it certainly seems to be getting out of that consolidation phase, and we're getting the next leg up now. I would certainly want to be overexposed there. And then I think some high quality, you know, recession resistant or weakness resistant dividend paying companies in sectors like utilities or possibly staples, and then a few healthcare names here and there. That's the kind of stuff I've been recommending in the Safe Money Report, simply because it's more defensive. They tend to have higher yields. They tend to have more economic resiliency, meaning they ride out turmoil better. And it's the polar opposite of a lot of the kinds of companies people had piled into last year, which was all these money-losing, unprofitable junk tech companies that were outperforming but are now crashing and burning because people are naturally more concerned, and they should be. They should be worried a little more about volatility. So that's sort of the safe money strategy in a nutshell here, and the types of sectors I like, which is different from what you wanted to be in the last year or two, or even if you go back to sort of the tail end of the pre-COVID era.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you outlining that. And obviously, our audience is a big affinity to the precious metals and the commodity space. But I think it makes sense to have some of those safer sectors with dividend-paying components, maybe a bigger cash position. And yeah, probably want to avoid the crazy overvalued tech sector and meme stocks for right now and focus on tangible things. Mike, if people like what you have to say, we'll put a link to your site down below. But where can they follow you online?
Sure. They can go to my Twitter if they want. I'm pretty active posting during market hours there. It's at Real Mike Larson. And then if they go to WeissRatings.com, that's where they can see some of the longer stuff that I do. I guess some of the ratings that we publish on stocks, ETFs, and so on. And if they're interested, maybe sign up for Safe Money Report.
Okay, great. Well, Mike, always appreciate getting your thoughts on the markets and looking forward to our next conversation. Thanks so much for spending some time with us here at the KE Report.
Sounds good. Take care.